The first one question that was asked after we left in the morning, if the very trend of the second Upanishad that we took up for discussion, where the boy comes to the master and says, I think food is God or prana is God, that very trend shows that the master is convinced that meditation must be self-knowledge, otherwise it's a brain work. Meditation is not mental activity, nor mental inactivity. There is something between the two, and that is mental non-activity. Non-egotistic, non-volitional action of the mind or the body is non-action.
Effortless action.
Not only effortless. The effortless action may be automatic action, reflex action. It is a pure non-action, where the limbs may be involved in an effort. The limbs themselves may be involved in an effort. The mind may be involved in an effort. But there is non-action. The ego interference is not there. And viewed from that, then the whole life becomes meditation. Right? So that in that progression of food and vital sheath and annamaya kosha, pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, it's quite possible that during the interval, Bhrigu lived the life in accordance with his principle, with his realization. I live in accordance with my realization that the body is the self. It is then that I bump into some difficulties. I find, no, the body is inert. I am sometimes depleted of energy, and sometimes I am full of energy. Sometimes I am nervous, too much of it. So I realize that the body is not the truth. Or the food is not the truth. Matter is not the truth. And then I sit down and if I meditated, I could have gone beyond the me. But I did not. Once again the mind is active, the brain is active. And the active brain creates an illusion of an answer. I've understood this, that it is prana that is the truth. Because everything is created by prana, and everything is sustained by prana, and everything is resolved into prana, into the life force eventually. So prana is the truth. I come back to the teacher with that solution. But that is a solution which is found in the mental field, thought field again. Then I realize that all these are motivated by thought, and so I think thought is the truth. And all this being merely the action of thought. And the master smiling and saying, all right, go and meditate, suggests that he was convinced that that is not meditation, that thinking. One must learn to discriminate between thinking and contemplation or meditation. Yeah?
Could you give an example of non-volitional action, please?
Could I give an example of non-volitional action? You're too late. About 20 years, more than 20, yeah. I could have given you a living example of non-volitional action. One must see, huh? In Swami Shivananda, one must see that. It's not possible to... because one may say that the trees are non-volitional in their activity. But then how do you know what the tree is, behaves, how it behaves? Non-volitional action is not something which can be demonstrated, is not something which can be publicized, is not something which can be willed into action by its very definition. And therefore it happens, and it happens in the case of those saints who have overcome the me. And even they do not come down and say, hey, look at the way non-volitional action happens in me. And so it is possible in their case, and it is possible for one to observe this if one is also keen.
But they still would have reflex action, just the same.
Oh, yes. Except, as a matter of fact, the Bhagavad Gita nearly insists, Sakta karman yavidvamso yatha kurvanti bharata, kuryat vidvan tatha asakta chikishur loka sangraham. The wise man, the enlightened man, must behave externally in the same manner in which the unwise man behaves. Except that in the case of the wise man, the action is non-volitional, and in the case of the worldly man, it is motivated. So his actions are exactly the same as ours. There is no external difference at all. The external difference again is a motivated action. I can suddenly change my cloth and pretend to be a Swami, but that's... Or I can dress like him and pretend to be a millionaire. It doesn't work. One who looks like something else only looks like something else. The change has to come from within.
So you couldn't even say anything about inner motivation, because this would be absent also. So you wouldn't know, really.
No one would know. Whether he knows it, even that is doubtful. But if you are a keen student, and if you happen to meet someone like Swami Sivananda, you know, you can sense. It's not something which is comprehensible by logic.
This, you just mentioned contemplation as being different from thought. Like, can you say something on that?
Contemplation is direct awareness. The light searching for its own source. So that if you switch the flashlight on, the beam seems to come out of the flashlight towards the object. And if this light travelled back to its own source, that's contemplation. That's meditation. Your eyes are looking at me. Therefore, when the switch is on, the light moves external to yourself, creating the object. Can that beam of light be turned on itself so that it becomes aware of the source? The awareness becoming aware of its own source. The awareness becoming aware of its own source. and therefore without creating an object, and without making the subject an object. Otherwise, the light, the source of light moves around there and looks at what it considers to be, or what it creates, what it regards as the source of itself, which is not the source of itself, but which is an image projected by itself, of itself, like you are looking into the mirror. When you are looking into the mirror, you are not looking at your face. When you are looking into the mirror, you are not looking at your face. That's clear, isn't it? So that if the mirror is distorted or there's some broken or something like that, your face looks funny. Your face is not funny. It's the mirror that is funny. So that when you look into the mirror, you are not looking at yourself. You are looking at your image. Now, between you and that image in the mirror, there is a movement of some kind of energy which enables the perception to take place. Now, can that energy be returned to its own source? Can the energy, instead of moving that way, move towards the eyeballs and thus see the source of sight? Vaguely, that is contemplation or meditation. Vaguely.
So contemplation and meditation are quite...
Contemplation and meditation, I'm using it in the same sense. But it is quite different from thought.
When you're trying to get away from the ego's motivating a behavior,
you cannot do that.
Because it's always there.
It's always there. You cannot do that at all. You cannot get away from the ego motivation. But by seeing, by becoming aware of it, in the same way as we were discussing contemplation or meditation, by becoming totally aware of it, I can, so to say, arrest that movement, arrest that motivation. Even as if you are looking where you are going, and if there is a snake, you don't tread upon it. Right. So in the same way, if there is this intense inner awareness of the many forms the ego motivation may take, then I avoid it. Then the intelligence avoids it, not me, not I.
It would take a great deal of time.
There's no time. I mean, you also got 24 hours of the day. Don't have less. And it does not need any sitting meditation, or standing meditation, or headstand meditation. You can do all that. But you are doing it all the time. And if it is possible to be thus watchful all the time, thus vigilant all the time, then you don't step on any of these snakes. You don't fall into any of the ego traps. Is that right? That's possible. You don't fall into any of the ego traps, and you are still watching. Is it the ego that doesn't want to fall into the ego trap? Is it the ego that's going to say, "Oh, look, whoa, I nearly fell. Oh, I saved myself. By tremendous, I was so vigilant." Even that can be egoism.
How do you get around that?
As Stancy said, even the purify is also ends in I. Purify also ends in I. Right. And how does one get rid of that? I can't get rid of I. If I gets rid of I remains. So, without doing all that, vigilance merely prevents some pitfalls, some snakes. And as you go on that way, suddenly you realize sometime or other that the light that was thus vigilantly walking the path of life is itself free of ego motivation. Mm-hmm. That's all. Mm-hmm. You are walking there, there is a puddle full of mud, there is some filth on the road, etc., etc. And your eyes see all those things and guide the feet away from them. Hmm? The puddle is there, the dirt is there, the thorns are there, the snake is there, but they do not exist in your own eye, do they? The eye is clear, pure, that's it. In the light of this inner intelligence or vigilance, life avoids all these ego-motivated activities. But that inner intelligence is free of all that, is free of ego motivation.
It seems that there isn't even that separation of surprise
No.
between you and the thing that you see.
Once it is yours, it's not. It may hit you just for a moment.
Is the eye still eye at that point? This is the trouble.
The eye is still eye, sir. Yes, naturally. The eye is still eye. So that the eye is still there.
The eye is all that exists, but I'm having a great deal of difficulty.
No, sir. The eye is not the all that exists. No. The eye is only one blade of grass in this lawn.
But when you have this self-realization, isn't it that you are the all?
The all is the all, not I as the eye. I is the all.
This is a difficulty I'm having.
Is the
eye
all is
supposed
the
to drop eventually, the awareness of the eye, or does that ever drop, or at what point does it become ego? And is ego the thing that carries motivation and judgments,
and is that
what separates it from the larger eye?
Correct.
Is there a large and small
ego,
eye? Or?
Boy, the large blade of grass, small blade of grass. You hit the nail on the head just there. The ego is the motivation, the judgment. Apart from them, there is no ego. So that if there is no judgment, if there is no motivation, if there is no desire, if there is no craving, if there is no hate, if there is no aversion, if there is no confusion, if there is no doubt, all these, if there is no ambition, if there is no inhibition, all these are the functions of the ego. And the ego is nothing but all the functions put together. The ego sense, in the sense in which it is used in some scriptures, is one of the senses. The eye looks, the ear hears, the nose smells and sneezes. And there is a thing called ego sense, call it anything you like, which seems to coordinate all this. That is the ego sense, and that is called the mind, manas, whatever you like, words, isn't it? So, if all the functions of the ego are paralyzed, the ego has been paralyzed. It may still continue to exist, yes, it does. As long as the possibility of any one of these things is still there, the ego is there. The ego sense is there. But it can be prevented from assuming to itself the role of an emperor.
Who prevents it?
I am. Who? Ask yourself. ask somebody else. That is our problem. Our the problem now is that the ego sense, instead of just being one nice, lovely blade of grass in this large lawn, it says, I am the owner of this plot. I am the doer of all these actions. I think, I smell, I taste, I see. That may not be true. I want to do this. I want to avoid that. I desire, I love, I hate. Can all these be switched off? Action still happens without a great ambition.
So is there always a sense of a separate entity then?
No, no. She says, there is no separate entity at all. It is the ego probably that makes, brings about the separateness of the entity.
But you were saying that we're not all one, or I am not all that exists.
I is not all that exists, no, obviously not. I is not.
Not the ego, I know, but that's all. The larger I.
There is no larger I, but smaller
I am.
That's all assumption. That is theology, yes? That is theology. And then you begin using self with a small s and a capital S and think that there are two or three different things. That leads to difficulties. Abandon this. What exists, exists. I don't have to bother about it at all. This is the troublemaker, yes? This is the self or the ego sense, the self-arrogating ego, as we chose to call it. The self-arrogating ego which pretends that it is the emperor of the whole show. That is what suffers, that is what sins, that is what entertains desires, ambitions and inhibitions. When that is seen to be non-existent, as such, the problem is solved. What is worrying you just now is that, after all, if it can be sublimated, if it can be sublimated, I can become one with all this. That also, may I suggest, is the function of the little ego, according in your terminology. That little ego, unwilling to commit, to sort of jump into the lake, it wants to reassure itself beforehand, before jumping into the lake, that when I, the last breath, I'll become one with this lake. That's also the function of the ego. When that also has gone away, has disappeared, what remains is the light. When all the functions of this separatist ego, all the functions are abandoned, what remains is the light. When all the functions of the separatist ego have been abandoned, and therefore it's not a separatist quest at all.
That's the hard part. That's the hard part.
It is again the ego that suggests that it is very hard, so that it can go on this way.
What about the inner self? I'm hung up.
Same problem.
Confused on the same thing he's talking about.
Same thing. There is an inner self and an outer self. We are there two selves.
I always thought there were. Yes, I've always thought there were. Capital and the small.
Thank you very much. I always thought that there were, therefore there are three. There is an inner self and there is an outer self, and I thought there were two. No, no, please continue from where you are. I have always believed that there is an inner self and an outer self. I. So I, an inner self and an outer self. How many are you?
Well, inner self, I just meant by that, the self with a capital S.
No, no. All that is not, that's not in you at all, I challenge. Self with a capital S is not in you. I repeat, self with a capital S is not in you. It is in the book. Some book that you read, self with a capital S. It is not in you at all.
I haven't found it yet.
No, no, the self with a small S also is not in you. That's also in a book. Therefore, forget all that. How many selves have you got within you now, right now? Is there an inner self and an outer self and a middle self? Or is there only one self? Are you only one? Are you one or two or three? I can look at something within myself, it becomes three. Again. I, the looker, myself, and something within myself. Which of these is you?
Well, I haven't found
yet. Which is you? No, you don't have to find.
The
find
looker,
now.
The looker,
find now. That's all. What are the other two? Other two things, myself and something within myself.
Ego.
No. I is the observer. I is the one that looks. I is the one that looks. What are those things which you refer to as myself and that which is within myself? Thoughts. Thoughts?
Even after enlightenment, though you...
Yeah, wait. Let's finish her. Yeah. Let's completely finish her. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
I is the observer. I is the looker. Huh?
Yes.
And I can see, I am the seer. I is the seer. I can see something within myself. That the myself is something created by the seer, which is a thought. And within that, the seer pretends he sees something else, which is another thought. The only thing that is true is the seer. Period. First class.
Not first class.
It's
still the wave, it's not the leg though, right?
That's a thought. Because unless the seer is discovered in its own true nature, we have no business to say that.
That's it. I want you to tell me what I'm going to find when I get there.
It's quite simple, it is. She thinks I'm laughing. I'm making fun. It's so simple. Just one, two, you see that these are all thoughts. The seer is only reality. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, even after enlightenment, one still thinks that there is an I. You talk in terms of I.
Why not, sir? Why should we assume that enlightenment is the obliteration of consciousness or whatever it is? Which again assumes...
Just separate yourself?
No, sir. Which again assumes that there is no such thing called non-volitional action. It's not possible. That without I, there is no action. Which is contradicted by your own beautiful body. The best part of the body's functioning is non-volitional. So, why should we assume that without volition, without the ego functioning, ego motivation, life is impossible? And what is enlightenment? They have a beautiful theory again. Theory. As far as you and I are concerned, it's theory. What did we call it? You know these gas lamps?
Common lamp.
Yeah, do you use mantles there, silk mantles? Right. That then you understand it when you'll understand very easily. That is the classical example given, though they don't call it a gas lamp, they call it something else. It's called